Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Ring Post Radio. I am your host, Ryan Knightsey. Well, we're here. This is the, of course, Ring Post Radio, the only podcast where we're doing our best. As you could probably tell, since I've not thrown over to my co-host, my usual co-host, Scotty Edwards. Scotty's not here. He's busy at the moment. We could not record over the weekend on our usual Sunday spot because I was out of town. It was my wife's half birthday and her cousin's birthday, and they had a trip planned in advance, months in advance. And so I was out of town this weekend. Scotty, he and I tried to record last night, last Monday night, and he got super busy. We had a time figured out, and then I had one of my own classic Ryan Knightsey dreaded migraines. Am I fearful to get another one while I'm recording this? Yes, but we'll see what happens there. So we shifted it to tomorrow because I had a migraine and I can record, and Scotty was like, I'll see what I can do. And he couldn't end up doing it last night. He's super busy. I believe we've spoken about it on the show before, but he's in the throes of not his wedding planning, but I believe he's a best man, for a friend's wedding. And apparently he's in the throes of that right now. I don't think the wedding's soon though. I feel like the wedding is a little bit later. Maybe like next year, maybe it's like bachelor stuff. I don't know, but he's in the throes of that right now, along with his usual work duties. So outside of that, there is no Scotty here today. So again, all those Scotty heads, what do we do? Scotty, what is Scott short for anything? No, it's not. I don't think it is. Scott, Ed, Scotty Edward, Scott, Ed. Fans of Scotty, you're out of luck on this episode. You're gonna deal with old grandpa over here, so I apologize for that, but we have still a good show for you all. I want to make sure we get to the show. You know, it sucks because it's like in past couple weeks for Ring Post Radio we've had really shitty like content weeks, and I apologize for that, but it's just sort of the situation of like there was kind of not really much happening in wrestling, and for whatever reason all of it came down into this week, obviously with Wrestle Dream being a big proponent of that. But then we got a bunch of news on top of that. So it just like happened to be like this was a perfect time for us to do everything, and then everything kind of fell apart. So again, I apologize for that. We'll talk a lot today. I'm going to do the best I can to discuss. I don't necessarily know how much, how long this episode will be. And if it goes long enough, Scotty told me that he might reach back around. Hold on. Pause. Might reach and have the ability to pop on real quick and maybe give some quick hit thoughts and stuff. But I'll do the best I can. We'll go through our list of topics here. I'll give my thoughts. I definitely certainly have a good amount of opinions on a lot of things that took place. So I want to give you those. Make sure we cover this episode. Make sure Wrestle Dream is covered. And a lot of the other WWE nonsense stuff that needs to be covered will be discussed. So without further ado, I guess let's get into Ring Post Radio, the Ryan Solo edition. So well, I'll just start off with the basic stuff of AEW Wrestle Dream. Of course, this was the pay-per-view that took place St. Louis, Missouri last Saturday in front of 6,293 strong. Honestly, not a great number. You know, pretty solid, but AEW has had certainly better attendance numbers in the past. And by past, I mean a couple months. Not a great number. Not a great number when TNA, you know, is potentially beating you. Now, whether or not those TNA numbers are accurate or completely paid for are probably fair game to criticize. But, you know, not a great number, not great to be beaten by TNA. Does not fuel the the TNA number two promotion people out there. It fuels them even more. So that certainly didn't help. Not a great number, but I thought overall a really solid show. I really enjoyed the show. I don't think it was like the best show of the year, but I do think there was like a good amount of high-end stuff. Nothing to me really scratching that itch. And granted, you know, I didn't watch this live. I did my best to keep me spoiler free, but I watched it on Sunday night. But nothing there really scratching the itch of like match of the year, in my opinion. Maybe even getting close to sort of match of the year. There are certain things that I've certainly peaked and I really enjoyed. But I think this show was like standardly high level, which you sort of expect from AEW. If you want to say it's a, I mean, that's the thing, right, with AEW pay-per-views, is that I think a lot of people can come out and say, look, that is the sort of downside of AEW pay-per-views, right, is that you are expecting. They have set up this weird expectation, right, that there needs to be a match of the year level match on every, on at least one on every pay-per-view. And I don't feel like we got it here. So is that necessarily a disappointment? For me, it's not. I mean, there's the main event I was slightly disappointed in, but that I think is a St. Louis problem, which we can discuss momentarily. But yeah, I think it's just sort of this thing of am I disappointed in having in collecting all these gold bars or whatever for me to finally get a silver bar? I don't know. It's still a silver bar. You know what I'm saying? Like, does that make sense? That analogy makes sense in any capacity? Like, it's still like, yeah, I'm still getting great stuff. Is it the best I've ever seen of the year? No, but a lot of the best I've seen of this year has been from this company. So, and I still think it was pretty high level. Let me pull up my match listing, in fact, and see where I listed this pay-per-view at the end of the day. Because it still ranked pretty high. I think it still got in the top five. Yes, it was number five indeed. Wrestle Dream, number four being Forbidden Door, three All Out, two Wrestle Dynasty, and one Double or Nothing. Am I a Freakazoid? Does not help the allegations. Number six was Death Before Dishonor. Seven was Deadlock Pro, getting so high up. Title Fight in Vegas. Number eight, AEW Revolution. Number eight, as tied actually, King of Pro Wrestling. We'll discuss that momentarily. Number 10, Battle in the Valley for New Japan. AEW just had a great year so far, and this is like the lowest high level pay-per-view, I guess. I mean, Revolution, I guess, is the lowest there within the top 10. All in Texas, super low at number 11. Oh boy. That was a 5-star main event. Crazy how the numbers work out. Obviously, I'll probably have to check all this stuff, but yeah, that's how it is. That's how it looks right now. I still really liked it. Like I said, do I think this show had like a 5-star main event like All in Texas did? No, I did not. But I do think that a lot of this stuff was extremely high end, extremely high level, and I appreciated it greatly. If anything, there was just a lot of stuff that was like, didn't quite get me into the next gear. And maybe that's just me after a 4 or 5 hour drive watching the pay-per-view. So I'm not going to give it full knocks on AEW. We'll quickly go through the Collision episode of Saturday Tailgate Brawl. Obviously, what they've been doing lately, which I actually think is just a good idea, because if anything, you know, otherwise you're getting rid of these Saturday shows, right? You're getting rid of Collisions because the pay-per-views. And why not just combine them? Why don't you just make Saturday Collision just the pre-show? I think that's genuinely a good idea. I think it can not only maintain Collision, and I don't know how it did in the ratings or whatnot, but I feel like not only can it maintain a sort of the consistency of having a show every single week and getting that, you know, those monies rolling in and whatnot, but I imagine it can maintain some sort of level of rating, right? I have to imagine. Am I looking at them right now? No, but are they even out yet? Probably. But anyway, Saturday Tailgate Brawl. This was on Collision. They had four matches here: the Death Riders, Claudio Castagnoli, Daniel Garcia, Pac, and Wheeler Yuta defeat the Conglomeration in their new Titantron video. Kyle O'Reilly, Orange Cassidy, Tomohiro Ishii, and Roderick Strong. You also had a tag team match. I don't know why cage match lists Roderick Strong outside the Conglomeration. He's in that package video, I'm pretty confident. Yeah, he is. He's in that video of the Conglomeration video. Yes, he's like this weird outsider guy. He's in it. Why? I mean, is he not on the roster page as part of the Conglomeration? This would be my main takeaway from this, from the thing. Let's do Command F, Roderick. He is, according to this, not a member of the conglomeration, but Kyle O'Reilly is, according to Cage Match. So let's look up Kyle O'Reilly is a member of the conglomeration. That is interesting. That is interesting. He's in the video packages. He's tag team partners of Kyle O'Reilly, but AEW itself, either, I mean, you cannot necessarily take the roster pages any sort of like true factor sort of thing. But that is interesting to have it for Kyle O'Reilly and not Roderick Strong. Could have been a mistake, but that is very interesting. Anyways, Eddie Kingston and Hook defeat the Frat House, aka Mercedes Moné's Belt Boys. Harley Cameron and Willow Nightingale again. Willow Nightingale, two pay-per-views in a row on the pre-show. I have to imagine something's around the corner. I have theories about why this is happening this way. We'll talk about that momentarily. They defeat the team of the Top Gods, Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. And of course, the top guys, Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood, defeat Jet Speed, Kevin Knight, and Mike Bailey in a great match that bled into the main show. Very Thunder, very Nitro, very Monday Night Raw, you know, 90s pro wrestling. Where at the top of the hour, we're going to have all this pyro going off. And I feel like WCW did it more in my recollection. Where at the top of the hour, pyro is going off and people are in the ring battling. It got the crowd jazzed. It got the crowd juiced. You know, you call that crowd Robinson because they were juiced. And yeah, the crowd was super into it. Having the pyro going off as they're like hockey fighting, I believe, in the middle of the ring. And then they go into a great high spot of just doing back to back to back a billion high spot moves, you know, in terms of tag team wrestling, was extremely effective. It definitely raised the match quality a lot more. The crowd was super up for it. If you are a pay-per-view watcher and you're only seeing that latter half of the match, it might get you to go back and watch Collision, especially watching it on HBO Max. So there's a lot of like good reasons why to do that. Do you do it all the time? No, don't do it all the time. This was very special and fun, but I thought it was a very cool idea. Other than that, there's the tag team, the women's tag team match I thought was good. The eight-man tag team match I really enjoyed. You know, a lot of, you know, high work rate action there. Tag match with the young boys, the Frat House against Hook and Eddie Kingston. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Eddie Kingston's kind of just been like a dude since he's coming back, which kind of stinks. And they haven't really done anything with him other than this Hook stuff on Collision, which is fine, which is obviously fine. But his output hasn't been that necessarily great. And I do think that it was, I said last pay-per-view that I believe it was Rust. And, you know, maybe there's just a little too much Rust. I guess we'll find out. I mean, certainly we'll see what happens. I do have various theories on things to happen momentarily with Eddie Kingston and Hook and things to happen momentarily with those women tags and perhaps why Willow Nightingale is again in this pre-show. But let's get to that main card. Let's get to the main card. We'll start off with the top, I guess, skipping over FTR versus Jet Speed, which we already saw essentially in that pre-show Collision thing. And we'll start off with Jamie Hayter and Tekla as the pay-per-view proper, you know, ring bell start here. Obviously, they brought out as part of the St. Louis Wrestle Dream thing of honoring those legends. We got the wife, my apologies, of the late, great, holy shit, why am I forgetting? I was going to say Les Kellett. That's not right whatsoever. And then I was going to say Bob Holly, and I don't think that's right either. Why am I forgetting? Let's look this up. Why am I forgetting? I feel ashamed. I'm not prepared. What is... I just remember that that lady was so much younger, and I remember the person I was watching this with, Luthez. That's who it was. They honored Luthez and his wife that was in attendance. His wife's name, of course, was a name. No idea. Don't remember. Maybe? No? Don't remember. Don't remember her name. She was so much younger. I think we looked it up that when Luthez was in his 20s, she was being born. So she was roughly 20, 30 years younger than Luthez. And she looked great for whatever age she was. But she was there. And it was also fun. Is obviously we're starting off Jamie Hayter and Tekla. We're honoring them. We're honoring Luthez. It's fun to honor the Luthez and honestly also honor Antonio Inoki with Jamie Hayter, who with that Japanese background. What it ended up being, which was very nice, which little known fact for all of those people out there, is Jamie Hayter obviously was in Japan at one point in time, Tekla as well, but Jamie Hayter coming out with Antonio Inoki's red scarf was obviously part of that, a thing of, honoring, honoring the Inoki side of things. Luthez, as far as I can tell, Hungarian, German, Austrian, Hungarian, Austria, Austro-Hungarian. His mother, I believe, was actually of German descent, but also hailed from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. I believe they're more Hungarian than the Austrian side, but it's just interesting because then they also had Tekla in this match, who was, of course, from Austria. And that would be the closest AEW can do, and really probably any company can do to get to that Hungarian side. But it was very interesting. What they did quietly was that this match itself, not only do I think it was secretly, but not, I don't know, it ended up not really being a number one contenders match, as I sort of predicted in the preview. That kind of got turned away in favor of a more interesting thing. But what it ended up being was that this match was sort of a Inoki versus Luthez weird amalgamation 21st century women's match between the Inoki representative and Jamie Hayter and the Tekla representative, the Luthez representative in Tekla. And so I thought that was neat. I thought that was a very interesting way to put that together. And once I realized that was sort of the connection here, I thought it was very nice. I thought it was a pretty good match. I thought it was extremely hard hitting, as one would expect. That was pretty much it. $500,000 tag team match. The Jurassic Express win. They defeat the Young Bucks. They have insufficient funds. I don't know what they were trying to charge, but why were they insufficient funds? They still had money in their bank account. Obviously, they were trying to charge something that was more than whatever the money in the bank account was, but that's neither here nor there. The Young Bucks, they lose 23 minutes and 9 seconds. This match was a lot of fun, as Young Bucks matches tend to be. This is a match to showcase Jurassic Express and to put them on the pedestal that they should be in this tag team promotion as of right now. A little sip of water, bad timing. I think that was a very good match. There was a lot of good high spots throughout. The Young Bucks are still extremely strong wrestlers. They're so down card at this point. But I do think that obviously they're still extremely strong wrestlers. Jurassic Express, this is the kind of outing you first need to really debut them as a team. It was nice to see a little bit of TV stuff. Maybe that's the reason why the TV stuff is a little weaker, is that they saved all this really for this moment. They did do some 6-man tags to showcase them a little bit, but ultimately it was saved for this big time moment here for the pay-per-view, for the Young Bucks to lose to Jurassic Express, to win that $500K and move on and, I don't know, buy a cool knife and gold tinted horns or something for Luchasaurus. So we'll see what happens there. What does that mean for the tag team titles? Obviously, they're held by Brodito. It's tough because I don't necessarily see Jack Perry and Luchasaurus going for the tag titles anytime soon. Neither do the Young Bucks, or should the Young Bucks, knowing that they're losing. Apparently, part of being the Elite as well, you're sort of teasing the face turn with the Young Bucks. Basically, coming out of this, you have potentially two babyface teams eventually, right? The Young Bucks might take a little bit. Do we need that right now in this company? Yeah, I guess so. You can tour with them. They're going to be draws, presumably. Yeah, you have the babyface, in the tag champions. So what are you really going to do with them? If anything, I might read from that maybe Brodito's title reign isn't much longer for this world. Who they would put the title on, I don't know. Realistically, it should be FTR, right? You need heels. I think FTR have been doing good work. And I think at this point, FTR might need to be put in there. Other than that, I think it's Hurt Business, but they have also kind of turned face. So, when you're looking at the state of the tag division, I don't really see, we're doing all this stuff with Jurassic Express and Young Bucks, and obviously Kenny Omega, he was involved. He was supposed to be on the show, tagging with Kota Ibushi. That didn't pan out for obvious reasons. And we'll have to recycle and do something else with Kenny Omega in the meantime. So yeah, it's just like there's a lot of baby faces now in the tag division that reads, you know, with the Hurt Syndicate, Young Bucks, eventually Jurassic Express, Jet Speed, Brodito, obviously, to all name a few. You can do any sort of combination of the Don Callis family as heels. You know, maybe, but there's, but that kind of has ended now with the top dogs of the Don Callis family losing, even though they're continuing that a little bit on Dynamite. So I don't know. I'm sort of on the mind that I think the tag titles are probably going to switch hands sooner rather than later off of Brodito. And I think the biggest contender in that regard is FTR, because they can feud with Jet Speed. They can feud with Jurassic Express. They can feud with even the Young Bucks if they wanted to. They can feud with the Hurt Syndicate, and that would be fun. You know, they have a lot of people to feud. I mean, if you want to give another option, that could be The Demand, Bishop Khan and Toa Leona, you know, the Gates of Agony, I guess the former Gates of Agony. You could also do them. I would probably go FTR right now over Gates of Agony in terms of just like what they're doing. I think you can do the Gates of Agony. I think it'd be more fun to do the Gates of Agony to elevate them that in that regard. But the FTR sort of run this and how their heel characters are structured. I almost feel like FTR might be the easier pick there, especially saying that they might fall off the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot. They'll be put it back on it later. Everybody calm down. AEW World Trios title, number one contendership, Tornado six-man tags. Now, when we talked about this, when we previewed this show last week, Scotty and I talked about how at the time, this was just set up to be a six-man tag. And we both thought that was boring because they obviously peaked with the street fight on the anniversary show for Dynamite. And they now are, for some reason, running it back again. So that the Hurt Syndicate can get their win back. Sure, that's fine, whatever, but you cannot drop down. And dropping down is what they did, but they also wanted to gimmick it up, as everyone outcried, and they not only gimmick it up, but the asshole also added implications of a number one contenders match. I think that was smart. That match ended up is going to happen on Dynamite, in fact. So I do think that was a good idea. Sadly, because of the I Quit match in the main event, plus the St. Louis Athletic Commission, the Missouri Athletic Commission, they were kind of slotted into not being able to do a lot of gimmicky stuff. They were able to do a table spot, and that was fun. And that was pretty gnarly, too, of Shelton Benjamin and Bobby. I was surprised they took it, but at the same time, I'm not putting MVP through that table. What are we doing? So, they were sort of in the sort of, you know, stuck between a rock and a hard place of the main event and the Athletic Commission, where you could not really do a heightened gimmick from that street fight they had. So just doing a straight tornado tag with title, number one contendership on the line, I think is enough of an elevation to get me there to be okay with this. Match was fine. Other than that high spot, not really much to really write home from. The problem with a lot of these Hurt Syndicate Trios matches, weirdly, that they were weirdly surrounded MVP in a lot of ways. For some reason, they are really just beating down MVP. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, wrestling psychology. The sympathy is MVP. He's an older man. He's older than all these guys. We all know that his knees have had issues. I believe he's wearing knee braces compared to all these other guys. So it makes sense to put all the sympathy and the beatdowns on MVP. But I don't feel like MVP is enough. Like, historically, MVP has always been like a showboater, right? Him as like an underdog babyface getting beaten down by three guys. I don't know if it makes, like, it's one of those things where it's like, obviously it logically makes sense, but I don't know if it necessarily works in practice. I think the big, obviously, highlight here for me was Shelton Benjamin. He's continuously great. Continuously very fun to watch. His rising high knees were incredibly fun to see in the ring. I believe it was this match, if I was not mistaken, suplex to ricochet outside the ring on top of everyone ruled. He just stands out. If anyone deserves a single run, sorry, Bobby, it's Shelton. Shelton Benjamin, historically a guy that always gets outmaneuvered in terms of a pecking order on any sort of roster by someone much bigger and larger than him that he has associations with. So it sort of is what it is. I would love for Shelton Benjamin. I mean, now as a babyface, Shelton Benjamin versus Kyle Fletcher seems a lot of fun. There is something about the Don Callis versus the Hurt Syndicate that is fascinating. Now that I think about it, they hurt people. You see this, folks? They hurt people. And the Don Callis family is a lot of people with a lot of its own roster of injured folks, injured wrestlers, all previously hurt people. So that is interesting. And now with the Hurt Syndicate, pretty much at this point, effectively baby faces compared to the heel team of the Demand, which is partly what this feud was, is to turn the Hurt Syndicate. Putting them against the Don Callis family, because then you can maybe get Bobby Lashley versus Fletcher, Bobby Lashley versus Okada, Bobby Lashley versus Takeshita in all these singles matches. But then you can also get Shelton Benjamin versus all these guys. And Shelton Benjamin's obviously the one that I'll be more interested in. The Hurt Syndicate versus Don Callis family. That is interesting. I'm going to ruminate on that. Speaking of TNT title match, Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe. I mean, what a great match. I mean, what great chemistry these two have. I don't know if it was necessarily the best match in their series, but still extremely up there. I went 4 flat on this one. Kyle Fletcher, again, I don't know how many more times I can sing his praises to the moon. He is a great wrestler. He is extremely young, not even hit his athletic peak yet, which is frustrating as a man who's constantly falling apart at the age of 26 for old Kyle Fletcher there. Mark Briscoe, still very much great at his age, which is frustrating for a man that's constantly falling apart like myself. Mark Briscoe at 40. These guys have a plethora of chemistry. Mark Briscoe is such a great wrestler, and Kyle Fletcher is extremely great, and the sky is the literal limit. I mean, the sky is not even the limit. The universe, the depths of our universe is the limit for this Kyle Fletcher kid. He is so freaking good. He is going to be a future star. I want him so badly to be a massive star for this company, a massively pushed, drawing, touring star for this company. Because he's just great. That's it. He's just a great wrestler. That's all you need. I don't understand how this guy can be even a great wrestler. He even does the small things perfectly. I mean, we're pretty much locked in to have like a generationally great wrestler for decades. And you know, and if I were to take away anything from Kyle Fletcher, right, is that, you know, there's some people that would say, like, and even how his heel turn started is, right, he's an Ospreay clone, right? That's how this whole heel turn started, and his feud with Ospreay sort of culminated in, right, is separating him from Ospreay, right? And you know, I was thinking about this when it came to Hall of Fame coming to the ballot and all these sort of things. Great show, go check that out if I do say so myself. Is that part of the reason like wrestling itself evolves is have someone coming in, and you know, ruminating about how like the style of wrestling evolves. And it certainly has evolved a lot in the past several decades, right? You know, 70s are different than the 80s, 90s are different than the 80s, the 2000s, 2010s, you know, all these things are slightly different. It might be different regionally. It might be different worldwide. And I was just sort of thinking about, like, you know, after Ospreay's New Japan peak, and really Ospreay's junior run into that New Japan peak, if you want to be even more specific, it's really Ospreay's junior run that really predominantly changes the wrestling style to be this more high spot heavy, athletic, high flying sort of space, right? I still think it's maintained. Ospreay has changed his style to be a little bit more grounded, a little more striking. I do think that has maintained as well for a lot of folks, but I'm just sort of wondering like when and who will change the wrestling style again. And the thing is about Kyle Fletcher, to bring it back to him, I don't necessarily see him as a guy that can change the wrestling style. I think there's someone out there that might do it. I don't know who that would be. I just think Kyle Fletcher is going to be a great wrestler for a very long time. He's 26. As long as he avoids major injuries, knock on wood, then I think he's pretty locked in to be a pretty great wrestler for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, maybe. That'd make him, what, a 46-year-old if he was for 20 years? That seems pretty plausible. 15, you know, that breaks him to 41. Plausible, even more plausible. Yeah, he's great. What's next for Kyle Fletcher in the TNT title? I don't really know. I pitched before maybe the Hurt Syndicate. Him and Shelton Benjamin would be very fun. I don't really know what would be next for him on the horizon. What's interesting also I wanted to say about this match, though, is that, you know, he had the feud with Hangman. We came off that feud. It certainly elevated him, I think, the mindset for a lot of folks of like, okay, this guy's serious. It can bring it helped bring him more so to those 30, 40, whatever minute matches those things are. You know, you talk about the old school idea of which I learned a lot in the John Cena thing. Weird that I said old school in that regard, but you get it. You know, this idea of your with young rookie greener wrestlers who are eventually good, you have to you're when you reach a level of okay, they can do a lot of these moves, it's a matter of now you have to teach them how to do the moves, spaced out psychology, tell enough of a story that it all makes sense. The crowd's obviously into it. You know, bringing your wrestlers to 20 minute lengths, 30 minute lengths, 45 minute lengths, long lengths, which is ultimately, you know, historically the main event style for any promotion, are these long length matches. And this one was 24 minutes. And I thought it was very extremely well paced. Mark Briscoe was a good guy to help out with that. I think that's what this match was. You know, it was nice to see this match, but again, I'm sitting there being like, I don't know, I could see more of Kyle Fletcher. Let's do something else. We need a little bit bigger. There's just not a lot there on the bone, I think, of roster of who could be super obvious to me. Hurts in the kit, again, I question. Next up, AEW Women's World Title match. Chris Statlander defeats Toni Storm. I thought this was another pretty good match. Toni Storm loses. She gets rolled up, I want to say, and she loses. No, I think she lost from the Big Bang. Very good, strong match. Chris Statlander is really good. I do want to throw in, I'll throw in the other women's match, which not necessarily makes me look great, but I'm going to throw in the other women's match just for more of the topic of conversation. Mercedes Moné defeats Mina Shirakawa, 16 minutes and 10 seconds to win the interim women's world TV title for Ring of Honor. This brings Mercedes Moné into breaking the Ultimo Dragon record by defeating Mina Shirakawa and defeating and winning that Ring of Honor interim world TV title. There's so many fucking words. Real quick Vitor. Do I love that, you know, we're taking the title off of Mina Shirakawa? Yeah, who cares? It's fine, whatever. It's interim anyways, it didn't really matter. Do I think that this build to this Ultimo stuff has been really great? No, I think it's like weirdly wasn't getting over. I don't necessarily think it got over necessarily for the crowd. I think a big part of that is that so much of this has happened in the peripheral. I doubt many people have gone online to even watch any of these matches, if not most of these matches that are happening on all these independent promotions around the globe. And so I think that's part of the reason why the Ultimo Moné stuff isn't quite going over. And knowing that Mercedes had, and I talked about this, we talked about this in the preview at the time, Mercedes did not have anything for this show. And, you know, we mentioned that, like, surely she'll need something for this pay-per-view. It feels weird not. And then sort of, it kind of feels last minute, we're going to throw in a title match. Oh, and, you know, throw in Mercedes Moné match, right? We figured that she wouldn't be here on the show at all because she was going to work CMLL only. And, you know, we thought to ourselves, yeah, she'll have a match. I don't know against who. It'll be defense, and we'll move on, maybe, at best, or nothing. And it feels like when it got found out that she has other title matches around the globe that she's probably going to win, I sort of get the impression that AEW wanted to sort of last minute break the record in-house in AEW versus break the record in, I feel like the next match she has is Hog, House of Glory, especially that promotion with its weird history of AEW. I think that's part of why this match got put together. I think if there's other people in the roster, obviously Chris Statlander, you're not going to take the title off of her. Athena, you're not going to take the title off of her. Mina's right there, right? Pure title, women's title, doesn't exist yet, right? At least I don't think so. The tournament was happening. Did the tournament happen? Pure women's championship. Did that tournament happen? Did it finish finally? Let's see. Who's the champion? Nope, it didn't finish. Has not finished. What? How is it not done yet? They've only had two matches yet so far. Queen Amanada and Billy Starks both advanced. They didn't have the other two matches for the quarterfinals. And one of those was in August, and one of those was in September. What are we doing with this? Put the belt away. This belt stinks. What are we doing with it? Anyways. So dumb and stupid. But yeah, so I think that, like, the personally, I feel like the Ultimo Mene stuff didn't quite get over to the fans. And I do think that AEW felt obligated to break that record in-house, break the Ultimo Dragon record of most titles held by one wrestler. I think it's a great achievement. It's a historical achievement to break that record. It doesn't necessarily move me or sway me. I don't know. It's very interesting when it comes to the ballot and Mercedes Moné's Hall of Fame case. More on that later this week, or really tomorrow, I guess, or today, depending on where you're listening. But you can take the title off Mina Shirakawa. It didn't necessarily matter to have her on there anyways. It was an interim title. She breaks the record. She's going to win more belts. I think she's actually already won her 12th. She's set to make another one, so get a third one. So yeah, it makes sense to do all this stuff. It's whatever. I think the more interesting thing here, obviously, is post-match for both of these matches. Chris Statlander celebrating. Mercedes Moné comes out to do her entrance. And then talks and jabbers and all that stuff. You know, get out of my ring. She has to walk by the frat house. Mercedes wins, celebrating. Chris Statlander comes out, jaw jacks face-to-face, right? They are obviously teasing the two of them together. And mix that with, they are announcing tomorrow on Dynamite, the Women's Tag Title Tournament. Instead of finishing this pure title tournament, we're going to move on to the Women's Tag Title Tournament. I think a lot of what they've been doing lately has been setting up contenders for that tournament. I think from the show itself, you see Mina Shirakawa and Toni Storm as a tag team. I think earlier in the show, we saw Jamie Hayter beat Tekla, and who came out to celebrate with her? Queen Aminata. And obviously the House of Sin, or whatever the hell the duo of Julia Hart and Sky Blue is. That reads to me as an opener for this tournament, as House of Sin versus Jamie Hayter and Queen Aminata. And in the pre-show, obviously, of the top gods of Megan Bain and Penelope Ford, and Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron. I think that's all going to be a bunch of the tag teams here. There's probably obviously going to be more. And what they're doing is putting basically every woman on the roster practically into that tournament, I have to imagine, so that they can probably pay that off at Full Gear, right? But you still want to do a women's singles titles. So what they're doing as well is setting up Chris Statlander versus Mercedes Moné. This is where my conspiracy cap gets put on my head, because if Scotty was here, this is really what I want to ask, because he has really been on his frustration horse, not a high horse, but a frustration horse. Where a frustration horse, of course, is a horse that has its arms crossed and says, nay. Terrible. Best joke of all time. Terrible. Where's that boo sound effect when you need it? Get out of here. So they're setting up to have these two face each other. I think this is very interesting. I think it's a smart idea to put those off to still have a singles title match while also probably paying off the tag titles at Full Gear in terms of crowning a new champion. I wonder if this was the original plan for the Toni Storm Mercedes Moné title match at All In Texas, and then also paying off the women's tag titles there. One of the reasons the Ring of Honor Pure title didn't start happening, and it has been so delayed as well, was because of a bunch of injuries. I wonder if it all, because of all that stuff, the tag titles, the women tag titles, have also been delayed. That would also read to me why, like, Willow Nightingale has not been doing anything and been on a hamster wheel, how so many of these people have been on hamster wheels in the past couple months. And we know that historically AEW, when they're kind of, if someone's not really doing anything and kind of just on a hamster wheel, it's typically because AEW is waiting for something else to happen, and they're waiting for someone else to be freed up. And in this case, I think the freeing up rather is adding more women into the brackets, right? Having a full on bracket with the tag titles on the line in the finals. So part of me wonders if that was maybe the plan for All In Texas, which is why you would set up the biggest match for singles match at that time to be Toni Storm versus Mercedes Moné. It did not end up happening. Mercedes kind of has also been hamster wheeling, as we've discussed on the show since then. And Toni Storm has obviously lost the title to Chris Statlander. Chris Statlander, if she loses the title, I think you can make a strong argument that it was a transitional champion. which is also very interesting. I kind of would like her to beat Mercedes. Now that Mercedes has 12, you can still beat her, take the TBS title. It doesn't necessarily matter. But I think that is where I'm currently at. I think everything got delayed. I think a bunch of injuries delayed stuff. And now everyone is seemingly healthy that they want to start running this tag titles division, and they want to set up a the big champion versus champion match. Just this time, it's Statlander versus Mercedes Moné. I will sort of question, it might just be for one title, might be just be for the world title. That's what Mercedes wants. That's what Chris is wants to defend. Is there any seem any interest in the TBS title? Not necessarily, but obviously it can play into their feud, past feud over the TBS title. Chris Statlander, past champion, arguably it might be a little bit bigger than Toni Storm in terms of what we have on paper in terms of history and all these sort of things, with obviously the difference being Toni Storm is a bigger star undoubtedly than Chris Statlander in this company. I don't know. I think everything kind of got delayed. That's kind of what's happening. They didn't want to heat anyone up for Mercedes Moné to have a big feud because they don't want anyone to get injured, and two, because there's no point because we're going to execute this women tag title stuff very soon. So I think that's kind of what happened here. And I wish Scotty was here to give him that answer, because that's my theory and I'm sticking to it. I think that's what happened. And yeah, it's fine. I think it'll end up being fine. Chris Statlander versus Mercedes Moné has obviously been great matches prior. This match being a little bit bigger is interesting. The tag titles, I see this right now, the finals, if I were to predict without even looking at brackets, my finals are going to be Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron versus Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. That's what I'm thinking. We'll see what ends up happening. Who wins from there? I don't know. I think Willow Nightingale should win from there, because at this point we've been doing nothing with her. Let's give her something to do. I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. Speaking of tag titles, let's talk about Brodito successfully defending their titles against Kazuchika Konosuke Takeshita. This was the match of the show, in my opinion. This match was great. Four great guys doing great wrestling. I mean, what more is there to say, folks? Kazuchika Okada is great. Konosuke Takeshita is great. Bandito and Brody King were both very solid. You got a lot of fun shenanigans with Okada and Takeshita. They didn't do the breakup here, right? They're still a team. It's still a family, and families sometimes fight. The families still love each other at the end of the day. They did some fun teases of that. I thought they did different ways to execute the stuff they've been doing lately. Will it pay off on Dynamite? I hope so. I'm at the point, let's do something. This has been sort of a fun way of doing the can they coexist, where it's not necessarily can they coexist, it's more just so like, will they, won't they beat each other up, because they so actively want to do so, they're just not doing so out of like loyalty, I guess, to Don Callis. I'm sort of not necessarily at my wit's end, I guess, but rather just like, all right, I'm at the fourth quarter. Let's wrap this up. We're nearing the end. You cannot do this any longer. Let's move on and do something else. I think what that's going to be, I have no idea. I think that with the C2 around the corner, I think that's the most likely situation. But the C2, I feel like, won't necessarily start until November, so we're still a couple weeks away. I mean, realistically, they have too many stuff to really do anything with to start even promoting that, probably, or properly even, in my opinion. I just stated that I think they have the women's tag title starting now and probably ending in Full Gear. They have the Blood and Guts show happening between now and Full Gear as well, that they're building that towards. So it's a question of when they're going to start the C2. It might be starting at Full Gear. That would make the most sense. In which case, I just realized that College Park, Georgia, I can attend that show, and that might be right smack dab in the middle of the C2. And that could be fun and interesting. But yeah, so we'll see what happens there. What's the payoff? Is it World's End? What's the match going to be between Okada and Takeshita? It makes more sense for Takeshita to win here. He wins two major tournaments Puts him more on the level of Okada, the most major tournament winning person ever in the history of whatever. And Takeshita winning that can put him more on the equal footing, because that's ultimately what we're doing, right? The story is, what is it, Senpai and the other one? I don't know. You know, the story has been that their relationship, and one is above the other. And now that Takeshita is IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, and maybe he can win two tournaments, the G1 and the C2 in the same year, pretty impressive. Can you argue that they're on the same level anymore, or different levels rather? I'm more fascinated about that story and that spinoff. But I feel like that's not going to happen really until the C2, which I don't feel like is going to happen until November with Full Gear. So we might have another month of this. So stick around, folks. Brodito, they're very good. I don't know what else want me to say. They're a great tag team. I think that, as I said earlier, I think they're going to lose the titles to FTR at some point. They probably should, just because for the tag division. But at the same time, I really enjoy Brodito. So I don't know. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Call me Adam Lambert. What do you want from me? AEW World Tag Team Title Match. Adam Page versus Samoa Joe. This match was really, really fun. It's two hiccups. Two major hiccups where there was some miscommunication about a nope spot on to the outside or something. And then Samoa Joe going back to the ring, all the stuff. And then they did practically the same setup for the spot again. And then Adam Page misses a moonsault and overshoots it. Or more so in those situations, is Adam Page overshooting or is Samoa Joe out of position? You would have to think Samoa Joe is out of position. That would be the most thing. But either way, out of those two hiccups, I thought this match was very fun. I think it went like 3 3/4. I couldn't quite get there. I did like the tag title more. Samoa Joe is just very solid and very great. 19 minutes, sort of like a disappointment. And also weirdly slotted tough. Like, you want the world title to be up there, obviously, but slotted after what I thought was the best match on the show. It just was a tough spot to be in. I think these guys did a really good job. And I think at the end of the day, look, it was okay that this match was in a tough spot to be in, because what this match was going into the show was the ability to just have two cool wrestlers wrestle, right? That's what it was. And by the end of it, you have Samoa Joe and the rest of the Yops turning full on heel, beating down Hangman Adam Page, so that this can spin off and be the ultimate, you know, main event for Full Gear, for instance, or maybe main event of World's End or whatever's going to happen there, right? So this, whereas in the semi-main event, whereas was, you know, 3 3/4, not the best match I've ever seen. Some spitty spotty stuff there every once in a while. It was very strong, but what I'm more happy about is, We have something way more interesting for the future. You have Hangman wanting to get revenge, a great spot for him to be put in character-wise, and Samoa Joe is a heel. Samoa Joe we saw as a babyface and how good of a promo he is as a babyface. Now I get to see him as a heel. I can't wait. Sign me up, Daddy Khan. That is what I am here for. So whereas this wasn't the best thing in the world, I think that is on the horizon when it comes to Samoa Joe and Hangman Adam Page. This could be the feud that finishes out in a year, for all I know. But that makes me very excited. There are ways to do this. Obviously, the rest of the ops turning heel. You have 3-on-1. I'm looking at who does Adam Page can team with to take on the ops. You know, I said earlier that you have the Young Bucks teasing a heel turn. You could do the Jurassic Express thing if you want. Could have done Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, but that's out the window, obviously. I think the more obvious, more exciting thing for me is another team that's been hanging out on the pre-shows, Samoa Joe and the Ops, Shibata and Powerhouse Hobbs versus Adam Page, Hook, and Eddie Kingston. That gets me going, folks. Eddie Kingston's a little bit rusty. No one's going to take that rust off faster than Samoa Joe. I beg you that. Even Shibata probably is the same. Hook has the history of the ops. He would be upset with them turning on Hangman Adam Page. Adam Page would like the extra help. And boy, howdy, folks, that might just be Samoa Joe versus Eddie Kingston on the mic. And I would pay pay-per-view quality dollar for that alone. So I'm fully into that idea if that ends up shaking out. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think that could easily be a part of the feud and could extend this feud a little bit longer and to potentially get us to the rest of the year if they so choose. Like I said, they got a lot of stuff in the meantime. They got the women's tag titles. They got women's Blood and Guts. They apparently, there's rumors of them wanting to do a male Blood and Guts as well that night. Scotty would be very angry. Full Gear, obviously. And then the C2, obviously. So we'll see what happens with this feud. The nice thing about it is they can probably extend it very long with the help of a lot of promos, with a C2 covering up the action, and they have a lot of guys that would be able to do promos, mainly Samoa Joe, Eddie Kingston, and Hangman Adam Page. I say a lot of guys, that's half the group. The other half, Shibata has been doing text-to-speech. Hobbs, I can't think of him as like a really great promo or anything sticking out of my head. Hook, he's fine, he's whatever. But yeah, so we'll see what happens there. And then the main event, the I Quit match, Darby Allin defeats John Moxley. This match was very fun, obviously heavily hampered by the St. Louis City, the Athletic Commission, the Missouri Athletic Commission. They are one of the stricter rules in the states on what you can and can't do in a professional wrestling ring.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I think they did the best they can while avoiding those rules. I like to imagine back in catering for the past several weeks, Darby Allin and John Moxley sitting over the rule book, seeing what they can and can't do, and trying to put together a match based off of that. Well, there's nothing in here about drowning your opponent. There's nothing in here about sticking a skewer under one man's nail. I just try to make that quieter so my wife didn't hear. She would not like that. So, yeah, I think they did the best they can. Accidental blood's fine in the mouth, at least. I think they did the best they can for all of those stuff. Was the match the best, in my opinion? No, I think it was extremely strong. I think, again, I went 3¾. Didn't quite get me there. But it was extremely strong to that regard. It just was like, I think it was a match that suffered by expectations. And I think in hindsight, if you are setting up a match in St. Louis and you are teasing fire, the use of fire every single week, and in the pay-per-view main event, you don't use fire whatsoever. In fact, you use water. I see that as disappointing. Also, the tiniest fish tank. What are we doing here? Get a bigger fish tank. Get a coffin-sized fish tank. Put a whole man's body in there. That'd be more fun. I mean, it just looked tiny with all these big man, Pac, who's jacked out of his nines, or Claudio, a jacked dude that's also extremely tall, carrying around this dainty little fish tank. Just kind of looked ridiculous. But yeah, I don't know. I think that, and obviously couldn't use glass for this match as well. So yeah, I think they set up a lot of expectations in terms of fire and what they did at the last pay-per-view, that this was sort of a disappointment in terms of expectations. I think the match was still very strong. The return of Sting handing over the bat to Darby was very fun. Seeing old man Sting was very fun and interesting. That's kind of it for that main event. It's you know, there's a lot of fun, interesting stuff. I just think it's like they did the best they could. They did a pop of surprise pop of Sting. They did other stuff they could probably around the Athletic Commission, that now that they've done it, those rules are going to be changed. They're going to be able to do even less here. I think that, like, look, if you knew that you were running this show in St. Louis and you know that the Athletic Commission is extremely hard and difficult to work with, why did you build up this match with fire every single week practically in this company? They build up that match of fire, and they went to have that a violent match that teased fire significantly and did not execute it in any capacity. I think that's a mistake. I think that's an extremely grave mistake. But it's whatever. I'm putting more of the blame. I don't know. I'm putting equal blame on both the Athletic Commission and Darby and Moxley and Tony Khan, I guess AEW as a whole there. look, I mean, athletic commission, that stinks. You know, it is what it is. It's for the safety, quote unquote, of the wrestlers, even though these wrestlers know how to use it, do it, execute things extremely safely. But at the same time, you know, those are the rules, and you tease something without executing it properly. And in terms of those setting up those expectations, match is still very fun. Match is still very interesting. It just, you know, was what it was in terms of lack of fire. And I was very upset with that. I wanted to see a man burn alive. Look, you set that up. You set that up, AEW. You set it up, Moxley and Darby. You promised a Molotov cocktail, and I got someone drinking water in a fish tank. Okay, whatever. Fine, sure. Is what it is. I obviously think this feud isn't over. It is now, if I'm not mistaken, 1-1 with Moxley winning the coffin match, Darby winning the I Quit match here in the main event. Darby, a couple more years of Darby, Hall of Famer. I'm thinking about it. Low attendance number, so it doesn't help him. I think that, look, they're going to do a third match. Is it for Full Gear or World's End? That's going to be the question. What is the third match? You've done a coffin. You've done an I Quit match. What's next? I mean, you could do a Ring of Fire. You could do an Exploding Death Match. I think that's certainly plausible. I think people will be weary of it based on the history of AEW, but I think these guys can, you know, do it again. They'll be more than down probably to do it again. I think AEW management, Tony Khan, would like to retry that. So we'll see. Other than that, you can do Three Stages of Hell or some sort of situation of that. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But I think this feud's not done. We'll see what else it goes to. I think Full Gear World's End would make sense to be what that is. Are these places, though? I think that's probably where it matters. I mean, am I completely literate in the athletic commissions of all these cities and towns? No, but maybe if I see a city or town, I can jog the memory. Assuming cage match is not running slow. Here we go. Let's see if I can jog the memory here. Blood and Guts. I mean, you could just do Blood and Guts, but anything's going to overshadow the women's match if you do that. Full Gear, Newark, New Jersey. Yeah, you can do stuff in Newark, New Jersey. You've done stuff before. Other than that, World's End, Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Yeah, you can do stuff in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. All right, you got two places where you can do a bunch of stuff. Hoffman Estates, Illinois, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was All Out, where the, you know, all the women's extreme matches were. Yeah, you could do stuff there. Can you do fire in these towns? I don't necessarily know. But Newark, New Jersey, I believe you can probably do stuff in Newark, New Jersey, if I'm not mistaken. So stay tuned for that. Feud's not over. We'll see what happens. All right. Let's move on and quickly talk about this shenanigans of old WWE. I'll quickly say there's the contract shenanigans that are currently happening. And that is, in fact, and it's the fact that we waited a day made us get even more contract negotiations because, you know, before the weekend really exploded, before Friday really kicked off, the big news coming out of WWE, the big negative news coming out of WWE was this Andrade contract news, where Andrade, the reason he hasn't been on AEW is that supposedly WWE is insisting upon a one-year non-compete clause. They, according to the contract that Fightful has reported, let me see if I can pull up here. But according to this contract, they cannot do anything for a full year. Let's see. Here we go. The contract reads, according to Fightful, the language of the clause regarding non-compete clauses is thus, upon termination, and can you believe we're doing contract conversations here, folks? Upon termination of this agreement by promoter, obviously WWE, for breach of the terms hereof, wrestler. So this is breach of terms. So this is, you know, basically explaining reasons of, hey, we're for firing you if you broke your contract. If we believe you broke your contract, you broke the terms of your contract, and they believe, and obviously they believe that is the case because, you know, they fired him with just cause in their opinion. Wrestler Andrade shall not work, appear, or perform in any capacity for any professional wrestling, sports entertainment, MMA, and or Ultimate Fighting Organization, promotion, entity not owned or controlled by WWE or any affiliated or subsidiary company thereof in the United States for a period of up to 1 year from the date of such expiration or termination as specified by the promoter in the notice of termination. So obviously to me that reads that they would have to tell them that. Provided, however, there that if no lesser period is specified by promoter in the notice of termination, such period shall be 1 year. So that, to me, reads that, hey, look, if we tell you it's 90 days, it's 90 days. If we don't tell you anything, it's a year. You're stuck, buddy. And that's what this year, that's what this contract says. I assume this contract comes from a wrestler or it comes from a WWE scout and given to Fightful. This is pretty rough. It's a pretty rough contract you sign. I can't believe any wrestler is signing contracts like this. Look, I think this is incredibly egregious of WWE to put out a contract like this and create this. And I think if it you took this contract to court, it will not hold up well. That being said, it hasn't, and people are signing it. Look, I am against WWE constantly. At the same time, why are you signing a contract like that? They are basically saying that if we don't like you and feel just cause in firing you, you're out of work for an entire year. No compete clause. I don't even know if he gets paid for this entire year, which would suck. Okay, well, here we go. There's also the follow-up. I should read that too. In no circumstances whatsoever shall either party to this agreement be liable to the other party for any punitive or exemplary damages. And as such, and all such damages, whether arising out of the breach of this agreement or otherwise, are expressly waived. That kind of sounds, I wonder if damages are the money? Is the money damages the money? And then if that's the case, you waived it. You waived it, Andrade. In my opinion, it's possible that everyone's fucked. If you're fired from this company and they say, yeah, you're fired, we have no reason to have you on here anymore, you're fucked. You can't do anything for a year. That stinks. It's incredibly, it feels incredibly illegal. You ask yourself, can they do that? Well, no one's challenged them. And in fact, dozens upon dozens of people are signing it and deciding to say, yes, I'm just going to be on good behavior. Obviously, you expect to be on good behavior, and that's the case. The other reason that makes me weary about this, that I don't like, that I don't necessarily feel like it's talked about, but it's just a thing that I don't like about it, is if they fire you for just cause, you're out of action for a year. If they fire you without just cause, they give you 90 days. Leave you, the just cause is budget reasons. They give you 90 days. That seems dubious too. I don't know if it's necessarily related, but that seems dumb and stupid. And I don't like it. And I don't like this stuff. Then what happened and what broke today is you have former announcer and obviously wife of Ricochet, Samantha Irvin, former announcer for WWE. She's out here saying that she has a 2-year non-compete clause. And she's already done with 1 year. That's insane. I don't even know if AEW would have picked her up. But you're saying that she cannot do anything for 2 years? That's crazy. That is crazy. I there's no reason for non-compete clauses to be that long. It feels extremely illegal. I feel very strongly that not being a lawyer in any capacity, that should not hold up in court. It probably won't hold up in court. Having a 2-year non-compete clause is crazy, but at the same time, I then go to myself and be like, well, why are people signing this? Why are people signing this? And she wasn't even fired for just clause, right? She was just let go, and she has a 2-year non-compete clause? Let me double talk. I gotta double check that, right? Samantha Irvin. Let me see. Does Wikipedia, because of course she has a Wikipedia page. Her stage name, Samantha the Bomb. How else we forget? Let's see. She announced her departure from WWE in October of last year, 2024. However, she obviously remains under contract in 2026. So what is this contract? Is it not non-compete for 2 years? Is it that she had time left in her deal and they're just not using her? That's the case? What the fuck? That's stupid. I think there's more details that have to come out from all this stuff. Will it come out? I don't necessarily know, but I just think this is incredibly ridiculous and stupid. Just this whole thing is incredibly dumb and stupid. The other thing that I find incredibly dumb and stupid of this company is this AI story that broke, right? Really, again, a really dumb story that I hate and it's stupid. And I want to pull up the wording of everything because I feel like it's important. The wording of all these things are important because I already see people changing the narrative a little bit. Let's see if I can freaking find this stuff. Perfect. Here is the Wrestling Observer newsletter with the, I believe, who technically broke the story, if I'm not mistaken, originally. Originally broke the story in the newsletter, Dave's newsletter. WWE makes a new hire to lead transition to AI-based storytelling. In this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter, this is quoted, of course, F4W Online. Dave also reported that Cyrus Kowarski was brought on in September as WWE's Senior Director of Creative Strategy after several years at an Asian-based MMA company, One, O-N-E, and media outlet BuzzFeed before that. It's so funny that BuzzFeed, the guy would do so many AI articles in BuzzFeed. I have to believe BuzzFeed has a lot of AI articles at this point. Must reported that WWE Chief Creative Officer Triple H, Paul Levesque, introduced Kowarski to the creative staff as someone that would, quote, lead WWE's transition into AI-based storytelling and integrate AI into creative services like video and graphics, which Levesque said was an inevitable shift when it comes to creative and wrestling. Kowarski also said he will be at a White House liaison with Levesque, taking on more duties in politics like his involvement on the revised President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. This is stupid. I hate AI. I hate it. I think it is morally and ethically wrong on so many different levels. I think that it, generative AI, I should specifically say, generative AI, I think, is incredibly dumb and stupid. I think there's, I feel like there's a more proper term, but non-generative AI has case uses so far that seem to be helpful in terms of, like, you know, the health field, having these case uses where, you know, it cuts down on times of testing various drug, concoctions in terms of solving medical issues and creating medicines. And if it's able to cut down on the time for us to create proper, safe and easy to make medicine for people, help solve several diseases, that seems incredibly helpful and beneficial to society. But that's not generative AI. Generative AI is Grok. Generative AI is Gemini. Generative AI is all these bullshit things that these companies are putting together that are built off of stealing content, and are quite easily to manipulate and do stupid things with. The case uses for all these things are incredibly stupid. The case uses are obviously at Grok, what is this? The case uses are asking it to make a picture of Malcolm X and Charlie Kirk giving each other a handshake. The case uses are incredibly limited for generative AI. And saying that it is inevitable to graphics, videos, creative is crazy, coming from the guy that it would be replacing your job. Triple H. And that's the goal. That's the idea, right? That's what when this article first broke, to me, that's what it read as the idea. It is known that Triple H wants to be seen as the end-all be-all creative mastermind of this stuff, right? That's what the WWE Unreal documentary was, in my opinion. It was to make Triple H look like a smart creative genius and for him to get all the credit for the creativity. Because I think the average WWE fan, I know the average WWE fan, knows that this is a show. And they do give that credit to Triple H because they know it's a show. The inevitability of it bringing into creativity is a way to just ease up tension for Triple H. We know that he was alleged that he wants to be like the next Dana White, right? And being all these political councils and whatnot, these presidential councils for sports, fitness, nutrition, The idea of this is that he can have more political sway. Someone like Dana White can have more political sway. Ultimately, that gives TKO more political sway. I think I would not be shocked if Triple H was upset that Dana White got a UFC bout in front of the White House lawn. I think he would be very, I think Triple H, I would not be shocked to be very ego upset about that. And to offload his creative work, because a man, this also, by the way, admitting a man has no ideas left, by the way, is just a way to free up a space to be more politically active, and it's incredibly dumb and stupid. That all being said, this is stupid. I hate AI with a passion. I hate that this is a thing that our society deems inevitable. Part of the reason it's deemed inevitable is because a lot of the people that are pushing it and backing it, much like they did with NFTs and Bitcoin and whatnot, it has now become, money has become so involved and putting money in each other's pockets, and OpenAI and Google and all these sort of things have become so involved that it's built off the backs of it having to be successful, or else they are screwed. There's too much money being put into it. It has to be successful. Don't buy into this shit. It's not have to be successful. And I have not even touched on how environmentally dangerous AI is, how Elon Musk has AI plants in Tennessee that have created so much of an energy backlog. It is destroying the environment for that local town. They don't have enough energy in their grid to support this AI, you know, server farm. So what they have to do is bring in generators that run on gasoline and just fill the air with smog. These are real stories I'm citing here. Georgia, we have an AI farm that's building. It has already increased, and planning to increase even more, are the power bills I have to pay by like 15-20%. There's in fact a vote happening right now in Georgia where we can change a little bit of our council of, I forget what the council is called, but we have a 5-person council that represents the entire state that tells Georgia Power what to do as a monopoly, because, you know, let power companies have to run as a monopoly just because. That's a story for another day. Not only are they incredibly expensive to run, not only are that those costs being put onto me and you and everyone else listening to this, not only incredibly dangerous to the environment, but they have to work for all these companies because they've spent so much money. I don't think they have to work. I think we can reject it pretty easily. Just don't use it. Don't bother. Turn all that shit off. This is a rant I've had many times with my wife, and I apologize to listeners for you having to sit through it. I have strong, very strong opinions about all this stuff. I think it's dumb, waste of time. And as a creative person, I hate it. I hate it. WWE has also already experimented with AI. We have the other stuff, the stuff with, you know, the platform, quote, pitch the storyline where Bobby Lashley, who I guess AI thought was still at the company, could come back as a wrestler who's obsessed with Japanese culture and history, basically giving him a Lord Tensai gimmick. That's another big question. You're feeding the AI what? Generative AI. You have to feed it something. Is WWE feeding this AI, for example? Are they feeding the AI the past history of WWE storytelling, far back as, let's say, the 80s, 83, right? 90s with the Attitude Era. What are they have to feed the AI something for it to come up with this idea. Feeding it something and having it spit back out a Lord Tensai gimmick means it goes back to as far as the 2010s of Lord Tensai. Bobby Lashley, obviously, as well, 2010s, whatever, 2020s. So it knows that much. Are you feeding it more? Are you feeding it AEW storylines? Are you feeding it New Japan? Are you feeding it WCW, West Coast Pro, World Class, Ring of Honor? What do you have to feed it something. What kind of storylines are you feeding it? Is it just WWE? If that's the case, it's just robot Vince McMahon then. What are you feeding it? And I would argue that Vince McMahon, Robo Vince McMahon, could have made this more racist. Just being obsessed with Japanese culture doesn't mean that he thinks he's like a Japanese man, or he's a white guy playing a Japanese guy like Lord Tensai. But Bobby Lashley just being an aficionado for Japanese culture, I don't know. That could have been more racist. I would have expected more of that from a WWE AI built off the backs of Vince McMahon's brain. And that's kind of what this is. That's what I expect it to be. Now, we did get the update on this story. All this to say is that we did get this update. from Fightful. Let's see if I can get this update up here. The report states the WWE creative team is of the impression the new hire is being brought in to the new hire, of course. What was his freaking name? Cyrus Kowalski. WWE creative team is of the impression the new hire is being brought in to find ways to help using AI to remove background noise of shots. I don't know what that means. Or organize files quickly. All right. That is technically going to be replacing a job of an editor. Not an editor, but a assistant editor, right? Or work on production elements as opposed to creative storylines. This is another reason why I don't like AI. Like I said, organize files quickly. That's an assistant editor job. You're going to get rid of that job. Doesn't make any sense. Work on production elements as opposed to creative storylines. I don't know. The background noise of shots is interesting. The shots are typically of the crowd. What background noise are you eliminating? Signs? Are you eliminating shots of signs? I'm confused at what that is. I'm confused at what background noise, if it's like a picture, you could just throw that in Photoshop. Confused what background noise is. Anyways, it goes on to say, AI is not replacing the creative team. A top talent said, Michael Hayes, Paul Heyman, and Ed Koski are not AI. And took exception to the belief that AI storylines were going to happen. This obviously also the other thing I want to say about the Bobby Lashley thing. If there was a one, oh, I didn't read it before, but basically it was something in the Dave Meltzer's original reporting saying that, like, look, once the bugs get figured out, we're going to implement it. I feel like this Fightful report, and I'm seeing it from some headlines, that this Fightful report debunks Dave's story. I don't see it as debunking Dave's story. I also saw, I'm looking at a website. Let me look at actual Fightful to see if I can get it. Because I'm extremely dubious that it's just for production elements. I believe another part of it was so that it has a, the AI, they've implemented stuff where the AI has all the record keeping and they can very quickly like search to see if two wrestlers have wrestled each other. Buddy, that's just cage match. And if I were to give you actual evidence to see if that's the case, I don't have any actual evidence, but I can tell you in the past month or two, cage match has been down. And they've even, I believe, published an article that they believe they were down because of data scraping, large scale data scraping affecting cage match. What company would need to have the need to large scale data scrape to that magnitude? That could have been WWE doing that. Just data scraping all of cage match, or at least, you know, just for WWE results, going back to who knows when, how long far back you need to go to do that, to create your own cage match database. That seems plausible for something WWE to have done. But I think that, look, I don't necessarily feel like these two reports cancel each other out. You have these reports of like, this is, you have the Dave report that says, this is what they plan to do in the future. It doesn't currently work. They believe that there are bugs that need to be ironed out. But once they figure out those ironing out, they will then implement it into the creative. And then you have this other Fightful report saying, no, they're just implementing it right now for production needs, background noise, whatever that is, and this archive of record keeping, which I would think they would have already had all that. But this archive of record keeping so that they can search to see if two wrestlers have already wrestled each other, right? That's what it appears to be. And they data scraped cage match when you can just do a cage match and just search it yourself. I don't feel like those two reports cancel out each other. I think the Fightful report speaks about the present, and I think the Dave report speaks about the future. This idea that the Fightful report has debunked Dave, I think it's wrong. I don't think it adds up quite there. Yes, they're currently using it for this stuff. The other stuff, the creative stuff, hasn't worked yet. Once they figure out the bugs, then they will do it. And the reason I think WWE probably talked to Fightful, and Fightful rather asked WWE for their advice, because they obviously did, to get the clarification, that's the only person who would know this, right, is to make everyone look better. Why would WWE say we're going to replace our creative team when part of the plan is to make Triple H look good, like they just did with the WWE Unreal? Everyone's going to think that Triple H is a genius. an AI is not doing this. No, that's not what's going to happen whatsoever. Triple H is not a genius. He's getting bad. He's getting worse. I said before, he gets more Vince Russo by the day in this company. I don't think these reports cancel each other out. I think both are true. I think both can be true. I think both are most likely true. And that's why I think I hate AI. As I said, I think it's going to get rid of editing jobs. They've already sounds like they're getting rid of editing jobs and assistant editors who can go through and tag different clips and all these sort of things. It's a great tool, but look, it's a great tool if you're an individual user, right? But if you're a big company, you got rid of a bunch of jobs. I hate generative AI. I get the idea of using it to inspire your art or whatever and say, okay, let's do this, and then I'm going to do something off of that. I think part of the art is figuring it out yourself. I think taking it, you know, the classic saying of art, art is just a bunch of stealing over and over again. Yes, to a degree. I also think art is taking that information from other places and filtering it through the lens of your own creative vision, body, mind, heart, and spirit, and putting it out into something else, into whatever form it could be that's different. I mean, it could be anything. I mean, fucking the inspiration of the ballot comes from like a bunch of different places. And it's not just like other wrestling Hall of Fame podcasts. It's like freaking Blank Check, the movie podcast. Like it's inspired by so many different things. And I filter it through my nerdy ass dumb lens and filter into that show. I'm not any sort of creative genius or anything, but that's creativity, folks. You know, generating ideas can be part of that through the use of AI, but even that I don't like because of all the other ethical, moral ramifications that it has. That's my soapbox. I'm sorry about my super long soapbox. I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate this story. I think it's a waste of time. It's stupid. It's dumb. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it so much. I got to transition out of this. There's only one way to transition out of this.
Hot Boy Summer. They bring the torture. Show uses a wrench. And then there's Dick Togo. And Yujiro. Because it's Hot Boy Summer. Hot Boy Summer.
All right, King of Pro Wrestling. Let's do some quick Yuta ice cold takes on King of Pro Wrestling. This show happened last week, last Monday. Doing it a week and a day late. 5,372 in Ryogoku Korgan Hall. It is down year over year compared to last year. Last year, out of the main event, obviously, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Naito. But in a similar, not, it wasn't KOPW at the time, but a similar event prior to that. I believe it was up, if not similar. I don't remember what the main event of that was off the top of my head. But look, if you're going to be like, oh, yeah, Zack Sabre Jr. is not a draw. He was in a main event last year, and the difference is Naito, and Naito was like a historically slam dunk Hall of Fame draw. So, look, I'm gonna give some praise. Look, Naito's a slam dunk Hall of Fame draw. Zack Sabre Jr., is he a massive draw? No, but like he's not awful. Anyways, KOPW, Sumo Hall, pretty great show, pretty solid, a lot of great stuff. Ice cold takes. IWGP women's title match, the start, you had Suri lose her title to Shuri. Scotty was here, he would have a lot of stuff to say about that. Do I have stuff to say about that? Do I have stuff that I can say about that Scotty has told me off air? All I do know is that this match was really fun, really. 15 minutes, like basically 15 minutes is insanely great. You know, I think. You know, Scotty was not expecting that. He was probably expecting at best 8 or 10. Getting 15 is pretty great. I'm sure he already has a video out there on his YouTube channel, by the way, so you can check out his thoughts on that match. And I should throw also his thoughts on the Marigold Sumo Hall show, which is happening on Sunday, I believe. This is a very fun match. Shuri wins. And also this week, I believe they announced Saya Kamatani as like the first big star heading to Wrestle Kingdom, which is pretty indicative of how big of a draw she is and how big of a company right now Stardom is. So yeah, that's pretty good. I expect that they might do Shuri versus Suri. No, sorry, Suri. Shuri versus Saya Kamitani there. They have obviously do not want to be doing Suri versus Saya Kamitani for whatever reason. Suri leaving the company is not very... Not leaving the company. Losing the title is not very great. I don't know anything. But we'll see. I'm not saying that Suri is obviously leaving this company. I'm not saying that whatsoever, obviously. That'd be a crazy thing to say. I'm just saying that this Sunday, of course, there is, if I'm not mistaken, a tag match. This already happened? Maybe it's already happened. It's not on this show. Maybe it did already happen. I don't know anything. Scotty, don't kill me. Anyways, this match was really fun, really great. Shuri versus Saya seems like the likely choice. Are they going to combine all three women's titles? I don't know. But they also have Momo floating around there. I sort of expect Momo to then be the title challenger at the year-end Stardom show. But I also heard rumors that that might not be the case. But the same, so maybe it's Shuri, but at this point, you would just do it at the new Wrestle Kingdom show. I don't know what's happening here. I think Saya Kamitani is probably on both shows. I think she's probably defending titles against Momo and defending titles against Shuri. Maybe winning titles off Shuri. I don't know. These are my expectations. We'll see what happens. Other than that, there's a bunch of tags. The Sonata Drill and Maloney match I thought was better than expected. Phantasma Tanahashi, who gives a shit? That was fine. Whatever. Aggressively fine. The House of Torture match between House of Torture and Oleg Bolton, the weakest on the show, obviously. Wasn't that? It was fine. Aggressively fine, I guess, but not really that great. The tag match, Oscar and Yuto Ice. I think they're an interesting team. Obviously, they retain the titles and successful outing against Shota Umino and Yu Uemura. Will they continue? I don't know. I feel like in all likelihood we might get is the two of them, which I did thought they did a good job, are probably going to go into World Tag League, and they're probably going to win World Tag League, and they're probably going to beat the Knockout Bros at Wrestle Kingdom. That's my prediction. That's what seems to be setting up here. Tag titles is a nice, interesting way to do something with Shota Umino and get him away from everything else and do something with Yu Uemura, who they obviously see a lot for, possibly more than Shota Umino. It also gives these young guys a way to mix them around a little bit to give them some more connections between others that you can pay off later. So much of this transition year is taking so long to do stuff with, but they also, New Japan historically takes forever to book their things. And a lot of people are getting frustrated. A lot of people are leaving New Japan, viewers, I should say. But I like this match. I think there's something there of the Knockout Bros. I think there's something there of Shota Umino and Yu Uemura. I think World Tag League will see this match happen again in the winner of it being Shota Umino and Yu Uemura with a tag team name at Wrestle Kingdom, beating the Knockout Brothers. Suji beats Gabe Kidd, winning the title. Gabe Kidd, I have to imagine, is walking out of this company at some point soon. He might hang around until January, February for whenever his contract runs up in this company. I assume he has some sort of contract. And once that runs up, he is flying over to the States for AEW. That's fine. We did get a weird, unaffiliated War Dogs sort of sign of respect from everybody. That's fine. Cool. I guess I'm fine with it. Just got to do something else then. Now what? Now what? What's next? What's next? What's next indeed? I don't really know what's next. And then the world title match. Great. Konosuke Takeshita wins the world title off of Zack Sabre Jr. I thought this match was great, obviously. Takeshita winning is very interesting. So a lot of people already upset that Takeshita, even though he's a TDD guy, even though it's known that he has a contract with New Japan, he's been there practically all year. Has he wrestled more in New Japan than AEW? Let's see. But either way, because he's also associated with AEW, a lot of New Japan say, look, we don't want another AEW guy coming in here winning the title. Just settle down. Everyone settle down. It's fine. Everything's fine. All right, let's see. 2025 promotion. Let's go with AEW. How many matches has Takeshita wrestled in AEW? He has wrestled, and we're going to include Wrestle Dream in this, 40 matches. Well, I'll say 39. Well, Jericho Cruz. All right, let's change up this a little bit. Let's do event types, broadcasted shows. Let's get the Jericho Cruz out of there. And I might still throw out Wrestle Dynasty. Just, well, it doesn't matter. He'll be there listed on both. So 37. We'll say 37 matches for Konosuke Takeshita in AEW. How many has done in New Japan? He's probably done less in New Japan. Let's see. He has done 30. Very close. Very close. Will he do one more between now and the end of the year? Probably. That's very close. He's certainly going to do more AEW too. I don't know. I think that's fairly even, fairly close. I think calling him an AEW wrestler is certainly fair, but getting all upset about it, I think New Japan's just want to have reasons to be upset right now, quite frankly. I think they have valid reasons to be upset too. Takeshita winning the world title over Zack Sabre Jr. I don't know, man. At this point, who else are they going to put it on? Saying the young guys, Umino, Uemura, Yotasuji. Yeah, we've been saying that for years. Is it happening? No. We got to move on. Got to move on from all this. Maybe move on from New Japan. I don't know. But like, it's been a bad year for the company. I think a lot of people are upset and frustrated and everything taking so long. I think a lot of other people are agreeing. Yeah, we got to move on. Takeshita's interesting. He's one of the best wrestlers in the world right now. Put a title on him. I don't know. Who cares? He's had a great year. A lot of it's because of his work in New Japan. You want a pure New Japan guy to be the world champion, and sadly, that's not happening. That is on Gato. That's on New Japan. That's on Bushiroad. That's on so many people. Don't be mad at Takeshita about it. Not Takeshita's fault. He's doing his best to have equal footing. I mean, basically 40 to 30 is pretty good. But, you know, they don't have anybody else. They don't have anybody else. They're not building anyone else. And I am perfectly fine having the world title on Takeshita in New Japan because it means that we have great Takeshita singles matches and world title matches. He's a great wrestler. What do you want from me? I want to see great wrestling. This company needs great wrestling. Zack Sabre Jr. is doing a good job. Takeshita has been doing a great job. Goto, coming out of nowhere, doing a great job. I think the Knockout Brothers have been doing a pretty bang-up job. They're losing Kid. He's been doing a solid job this year. Suji's been doing a solid job this year. Finley, he was not doing anything this show. He's on it. Didn't do anything, though. I think that there are people that doing stuff with. It's just they aren't, you know, pulling any triggers. They're going to lose more people between now and whatever next time. It's a dark age. Look, if you're a New Japan fan, it's another dark age. That's just what it is. If you were jumping off the company because it's no longer the hot run, I get it. But look, it's a dark age. Doesn't mean that there isn't going to be good stuff in here. It doesn't mean that these wrestlers don't need to be supported or they aren't going to be having great work, some of their best work in this period. It just means the company's in a dark age. It will come back around. It'll take time. It takes time. It took several years to get New Japan out of their dark ages. Practically a decade. We'll see. I mean, if it goes on to a decade, we'll look at another 5 years of this kind of nonsense, and I would get it. And maybe there's an eventual young lion that can help pull them out. Maybe it's Yuya Mora, even, you know, a Tanahashi-esque guy. I don't know. I think the bigger changes that need to happen in New Japan are behind the scenes, specifically of Gato. I question the Bushiroadness of some things, basically with, you know, other Stardom-esque stuff. But at the same time, you know, Bushiroad has already removed one booker, longtime booker for a company, and Stardom exploded. Maybe they should do the same for New Japan. This was a really fun show. This was a really great show. Top 10 show of the year. A lot of fairly solid stuff. Like I said, I love the main event. I thought the sub main event was really fun. I thought the tag match was very fun. I thought the opener of Suri and Shuri was very fun. Great show. very enjoyable. Go check it out. Honestly, you could probably watch all of it. It's fine. Yeah, fun show. Scotty definitely does a show about the Marigold Grand Destiny preview. I know for a fact he has a preview of that on his YouTube. And if not, he's coming. Not really much for me to preview. I just want to point out, obviously, this is Siri Yamaoka versus Big Hosh. That's a big circle of a singles match if I've ever seen one. This upstart rookie versus Big Hosh, one of my favorite women's wrestlers of all time. That's what I'm talking about. Kazuna Tanaka versus Shino. I don't know anything about Shino, but obviously Tanaka, daughter of Masato Tanaka, and another person that I always forget. Io Sky versus Mayu Iwatani, a big, massive circle. I mean, obviously, come on, guys. Come on, guys. I mean, we're watching that. We're watching that. Io Sky versus Mayu Iwatani? What are we doing? Thunder Rock, baby. Maya Sakurai versus Victoria Izuki. That should be fun. And Utami Hayashishita versus Miku Ano, the winner of the Dream Star. So I would expect a title change there. Io Sky versus Mayu Iwatani, an all-time match. Give the year contender, possibly. And down ballot, Big Hosh versus Yamaoka. Oh, I'm there, baby. I'm there. That's Marigold. As much of a preview you'll get out of me, you'll get way more of Scotty, certainly on his YouTube. Is there any other stuff I want to talk about? I'm looking around. I'm going to shout out the All Japan. Yeah, All Japan. They're doing Go Shiozaki versus Kento Miyahara next week. No, sorry, not next week. This Wednesday for the Triple Crown title. Look, All Japan's been dead for quite a while. Boy, howdy. Get me into it, baby. Go Shiozaki versus Kento Miyahara. Woo. Woo. Two of the best wrestlers. Woo. Let's go, baby. I'm there. I'm there. I'm jazzed. I'm excited. That's pretty much it I probably have for me from this week's episode of Ring Post Radio. I appreciate everyone for listening to this one. Go a little short. Got all of my talking points out of the way, I think. The best I remembered. So I appreciate everyone listening. Subscribe to Ring Post Radio wherever we get podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Make sure you subscribe, obviously, but give us 5 stars. It extremely helps us out. Weirdly, it helps out the algorithms and all this sort of nonsense. But gets other people showing it. More so importantly, tell someone about Ring Post Radio. I always think back to myself of like, how did I get into a podcast? And realistically speaking, it's because someone told me about one. Or I might have seen a social media post about it from someone I trust. But 9 times out of 10, it's someone told me about it. Or someone else went on another podcast and I checked it out and I said, oh, okay, this seems interesting. I'm going to stick around. There's not many podcasts that gets pushed my way algorithmically that I end up listening to. They could be different from other people. Most of the time, it's other people telling me about stuff. So go check that out. Go tell another person about Ring Post Radio. We'll be back on Sunday for sure. I can't actually say for sure, so I take that back. Probably Sunday. And if so, Sunday, probably Sunday night. Could be Monday night, but probably Sunday night. To talk about, I presume, the Marigold Sumo Hall show and the probably maybe preview something else. I don't know. Maybe preview something else. There's another Saturday Night's Main Event, but who gives a shit? Seth Rollins got injured. I feel so bad for Seth Rollins getting injured, by the way. Like, this guy cuts a promo about how he's the best wrestler alive, and then in that moment, he's also currently injured and has to go out for surgery. This was meant to be like the, like, sometimes I think of like that when it comes to like the Hall of Fame ballot is like doing big things in this period. And then people being like, this is my case. I'm the best wrestler alive. And in that moment, his shoulders completely detached from his body and he has to leave and go for surgery. This guy's going to fall off the ballot again. It's going to be funny. This one's a little bit sadder and bittersweeter, but it's funnier. Maybe we'll talk about Saturday Night's Main Event. Probably not. These shows don't really matter anymore and haven't for a while. So yeah, might be a lighter week. We'll see. Might get some quick hitter thoughts, ice cold thoughts from Scotty about Wrestle Dream. But yeah, that's pretty much it. That's it for me here. My match of the week. How lest we forget, folks. Lest we forget. My match of the week is going to be from Wrestle Odyssey. Yes, that Noah show from many moons ago as well. Did Scotty and I forget to review it? Yes. But I watched it, and my match of the week from is going to be watching from that. That's the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Titles. Alpha Bane and Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf, not the other way around. Again, continue to be a great tag team that I enjoy watching greatly. Not going to be any sort of tag team of the year, I don't think. I always feel like this category has been a little weak lately, but I don't necessarily think they're going to hit that mark here. I think it's too late of a stage for them. But at the very least, I've been enjoying them greatly. Need more of them. Of course, they defended, no, sorry, they lost their titles to Daga and Daiki Onoshima in a very great match. Went 4 flat. Go check that out on Wrestle Odyssey. Yeah, go check out the last 5 matches or so. I mean, you can skip Fujita versus Morton or Suzuki, but that's just kind of like a fun old men nonsense match, less than sub 10. Good, check that one out. But yeah, pretty good show, at least to last 5. Obviously check out those tag team matches. Anything with Alpha Wolf Dragon Bane as a tag team, you have to check it out. That's how I feel at this point in my life. If I see Alpha Wolf and Dragon Bane on the card in a tag team situation, I'm watching it. I have to watch it. They're great. They're great. That's it for this week's episode of Ring Post Radio. We'll be back next week for an all new episode, probably Sunday night, could be Monday. I don't know yet. I have to talk with Scotty, see how busy he is. Maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, the ballot. Let's see how I am. I got through this entire thing without a migraine. I'm very happy about that. I didn't really expect it, but I'm planning to go eat dinner, and then I might record a first half of what my ballot is going to be for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. That will either come out tomorrow or next week. You'll find out. I did not get the Bill Mercer episode together. Look, folks, I messaged several people asking if they would like to be a guest. And look, it's a last minute addition, so I get it. Not only did I not get any no's from the people I asked, I got ghosted. Well, I don't even know if I got ghosted, but presumably they maybe saw that in my messages, but either way, they didn't respond to any of my messages. I won't say who those people are, but am I shocked? Not necessarily. Not necessarily that I got ghosted. Frustrating, though. It is what it is. I'm going to tell that to Scotty off air probably eventually. That's it for this week's episode of Ring Post Radio. We'll be back next week. Hopefully tomorrow I have an episode of The Ballot, first half. If not, it'll be next week. But yeah, my throat is dying, so I certainly got to drink water. I love you all. Have a good rest of your day. And of course, enjoy a little sip of water. Enjoy your Taco Bell. Bye.
Ring Post Radio is the only show hosted by Ryan Knightsey and Scotty Edwards that talks about the entire world of professional wrestling. With new episodes coming out every Sunday, there is absolutely no reason to not listen to real, honest wrestling opinions from two crazy maniacs. Have a hot boy summer and listen along to Ring Post Radio every Sunday on the Countout Network.
This has been a Countout Podcast.